Illinois Public Media. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, and for the second year in a row, we are coming to you from the Illinois State Fairgrounds in Springfield. Right now, I'm speaking to you live from the Ag Tent. It is wet here. There was a monsoon rainfall this morning, but the show must go on, and we've maneuvered our way through the rain and a little bit of flooding to make this broadcast happen. The State Fair opened just yesterday. We've got some great conversations lined up. On Monday, you're going to hear an interview I taped at the Governor's Mansion yesterday with Governor J.B. Pritzker. And of course, later in today's show, we'll be giving you a taste of what the fair has to offer this year, as well as a look at politics and agriculture at the fair. There is also a bit of breaking news in state government for us to address. The Illinois Supreme Court has upheld the state's ban on the future sale and possession of what the law defines as assault weapons. It was a 4-3 decision that just came out this morning as we are going to air. You can find out more about that from your partner stations throughout the course of the news cycle today. But we begin today's show with Natalie Phelps Finney, director of the Illinois Department of Natural Resources, DNR for short. The department has a significant presence at the fair through what's known as Conservation World, basically a look at what the great outdoors has to offer in Illinois. Natalie Phelps Finney was appointed as director of DNR in January of this year, though it's worth noting she still needs to be confirmed by the Illinois Senate. She hails from Southern Illinois. She's the daughter of former U.S. Representative David Phelps. From 2017 to 2019, she was a Democratic state representative based out of Harrisburg. And before her current appointment, she'd spent a bit over a year as deputy director of DNR. In that role, she oversaw legislative affairs and land management for the department. Director Phelps Finney, thank you for taking the time to be with us today. Welcome to the 21st Show.
Yeah, thank you, Brian, for having me. It's an honor to be here.
So I should say, listeners, we are on location. We can still take your calls, so you can join the conversation today at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. All right, Director, you replaced Colleen Callahan, first woman to serve as DNR director. You were her deputy, as I mentioned. The consensus seemed to be she really got the department back on track after some very difficult years during the budget impasse when former Governor Bruce Rauner was in office. How do you keep that legacy going? How do you help the department continue to recover and grow?
Sure. I worked very well with Colleen. It was an honor to work with her and had no idea I'd be asked to be director. And so when I became director, I did an assessment, right, an internal assessment, and was already able to do that having been deputy director for a year and a half before. So I saw things that I thought needed to change and be improved, and quickly went to get that plan together of how we can continue to right the ship and improve things. And so we're doing just that.
One of the big issues at the fair has been deferred maintenance at state parks. That's been really challenging. Talk about where is the state in terms of addressing this, what has been a huge backlog of maintenance needs.
Brian, we have at least $1 billion of deferred maintenance, and that's not just our state parks, that's all of our sites, our historic sites. We have over 4,000 buildings, so anything that has a roof on it, from a vault toilet to our Illinois State Museum, we have a lot to overcome. It's a huge mountain to climb, and we can't do it by ourselves. So we're looking at being creative. We have our Illinois Conservation Foundation, which is our fundraising arm that was created in statute to fundraise. We have to get that operating at the best that it can. We also have to look at other avenues. We can't just keep going to the state legislature and saying, fix our problems. We will certainly ask to maximize our budget like we have the last 2 years. And make that case. We think we have a strong one, but that alone will not solve it either. So we are actively and being very creative about how we can address this issue, because we have to get this right and we've got to save these buildings.
In your role as deputy director, you coordinated with the governor's office and the U.S. Department of the Interior when it came to the Bipartisan Infrastructure Act investments. What difference did that funding make for what DNRs do?
Sure. So that funding, we get huge funding. We have $75 million from the Department of Interior for our abandoned mine land program. And those are mines that were pre-1978 mines. And so, but again, that money is earmarked specifically for that. So while, yes, we got $75 million a year, not just this year, a year for the next 15 years, over $1 billion. It will be hugely helpful, though, for all those mines that are, you know, just sitting there in many distressed communities in my backyard in Southern Illinois. We can go in and restore those and maybe provide some recreation and some benefit to the community. So it's going to make a huge impact. We obviously are hiring staff to handle that portfolio. and many other things to come with that money.
You know, I think people maybe don't realize the role that DNR has in like protecting environment, not just in state parks and wildlife areas, but really in other aspects. Like you mentioned mines, there's capping abandoned oil wells and things like that. Can you talk a little bit about that mission?
Sure, and again, with the bipartisan infrastructure law, we did get a significant amount of money for the oil well capping, oil well plugging. We have over 4,000 abandoned wells.
Well, how does that happen? The wildcat drillers are like, you know what, not working for me, I'm just going to disappear into the night.
So it's usually, I would say, companies that either went bankrupt or companies that were less than, you know, what we would say is a good acting company. For the most part, we have good oil well companies that these are their assets, and they will take them. They go through our program to do into what we call a temporary abandonment, and we provide that for them. But you've got those bad actors, and then you have some that just go belly up, and then you have these abandoned wells. And the 4,000 that we have are just the ones we've identified. We're sure there's many more out there, maybe in a farmer's field or wherever on land that we just don't know about yet.
Wow. Yeah, I think people don't realize the extent to which Illinois is an oil, or at least was, an oil-producing state.
Yes.
There's actually a derrick, one of those little mock ones on the conservation world. All right, let's shift gears a little. And actually, let me take a moment to remind listeners this is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are coming to you live from the Illinois State Fair in Springfield. I'm speaking with Natalie Phelps Finney, who is the director of the Illinois Department of Natural Resources. She's been in that role since January of this year. One of the department's focuses is conservation, and they have an exhibit at the fair called Conservation World. Let's talk a little bit about conservation and climate change. Last year, DNR oversaw a task force, the 30 by 30 Conservation Task Force. For our listeners, that means protecting 30% of the state's land and water by the year 2030. What makes those figures important in the fight against climate change?
So when we talk about, there's a lot of talk right now about carbon sequestration, right? This we're in this crisis, and we need to get all the carbon out of the atmosphere we can, and we agree with that. We believe, and science shows, that the best way to carbon capture is through trees and plants. And that's a fact. And so that's where our mission lies. We're not against other forms necessarily, but we, as the Department of Natural Resources, has to maximize that. So we only own about 4% of the land. And so to secure 30%, we're not going to be able to buy all the 30% that we need. So we're being, again, creative, working with our private owners to educate them and make sure they know how to maximize their ground so that it's the best form of carbon capture that it can be.
I was going to say, how do you bridge? That's my high school math here. 26% in 7 years? That seems like a stretch. How do you make that happen?
It is. But, you know, there's a lot of private lands that are in our, we have our Illinois Nature Preserve Commission. So we are continuously, that commission continues to adopt new properties into that. And that protects that property in perpetuity, just like a lot of our other grants that we get from the federal government. So we are still able to acquire land and then also preserve other lands that we won't necessarily own. And if we can continue to partner with our farmers and our other private landowners, even people in the city, anywhere people can do a pollinator garden in their backyard or whatever, that's how we're going to piece this 30%. We understand the challenge here that to get 30%, but it's not going to stop us from trying.
Yeah.
We have to give it all we've got. And we've looked at it's like the size of New Jersey is what we really need to acquire. We kind of do that and superimpose it on an Illinois map. That's a lot of land. But we've got to figure out a way to get there as quickly as we can.
And that land can still be used for agriculture purposes.
I want to be clear, we're not trying to condone converting all of our ag properties into non-productive. We know that can create its own crisis. But there are other properties, again, back to our abandoned mine lands we're talking about. That's a perfect low-hanging fruit for us to use that money that we've got to restore and put native grasslands and plant trees to get towards our goal.
So just yesterday, the department launched a climate action plan. What are some of the big picture takeaways from that?
It is a robust plan. It's a huge document that I've read every word of, and it is impressive. But we had 70 people from across all disciplines at DNR come together, work with U of I's SEDAC, Smart Energy Design Center, to create that. And really, it's an internal document that will guide us, but it's a living document. And so it's really challenging us to look at all of our practices. And one example I gave yesterday when I spoke was the Jake Wolf Hatchery. We looked, you know, our team said, what would happen if if we just turned our temperature up a bit on our freezers. It could still keep the fish food cold enough. But maybe, what would that do? And what if we change the LED lighting? Well, through just a few of those little tweaks, save 25% savings, which is a huge number. It's a big electric bill there. So that's just one example. But we're also looking at solar projects and EV charging stations at state parks, which will not only decrease the carbon footprint, but provide services, again, to our constituents.
So just last week, I had the opportunity to talk with Pete Buttigieg, the Secretary, the U.S. Secretary of Transportation.
Sure.
We did talk about climate change, and I want to ask you one of the questions I asked him, which is, and it has to do with the part of the state you're from, Southern Illinois. There are plenty of people who do not see climate change, global warming, as a major threat to our society, at least not one that we need to be changing our behavior and practices for. How do you convince our fellow Illinoisans that this is something we can, either fix together or we're going to burn together?
Yeah. It is a real challenge and one that I'm very well aware of because of I have a lot of friends even and neighbors that will scoff and say, it wasn't too long ago people were saying we might go into an ice age. And so a lot of mockery kind of going on. And what I found, Brian, is with people is that we don't want to make people enemies, right? And we don't want to shove things down people's throats. We need to find a way to engage people at the level that their comfort, where they're comfortable at, and just continue to educate and do it with respect and consideration of where they're at. And I think most people come from a place of fear, right? It's a fear of change. If they're going down this road, what are they going to shove at me next? So I think we just have to do this in a way that's considerate of people's real fears and concerns. And I've found in my leadership style that you can bring people along.
Where do you find that common ground?
Again, listening to people. It's about empathetic listening. If in my previous career as a nurse practitioner, when I would listen to people and they may disagree with what I was suggesting they would do, and I would say, please tell me why it is you feel that way. And if I listened to them and gave credence to what they were saying and say, I hear where you're coming from and I can appreciate that. Let me suggest this to you and kind of meet them in the middle ground. We could usually come to an agreement for their treatment and oftentimes on political issues or climate issues as well.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that aspect of your bio, being a nurse practitioner. I can see where that's helpful as a listener, right, when you're doing political work, for example. How does that overlap with what you're doing now, leading the Department of Natural Resources?
Being a nurse is such a wonderful thing. Nurses are smart. We always laugh in nursing and say, like, you use what you've got. If it's a spoon and a whatever, you just fix the wound or whatever you can do. That's kind of an inside joke with nurses. But nurses are just creative and just they're problem solvers, just at the most basic of what a nurse is. And then as a nurse practitioner, learning those diagnostic skills and how to get a treatment plan is very, very complicated. But it is that core, that empathetic listening, that where it all starts. Because we know in medicine, the diagnosis, over 80% of it is from the history, what the person's telling you. You can almost diagnose a patient, you should be able to, if you listened and you asked the right questions. And so I brought those same skills, and they're certainly transferable, and mainly what I do every day is lead, and that's something, no matter what your background is, you can either lead or you can't.
So just a couple of minutes left in our conversation. As I mentioned at the beginning, you're still awaiting confirmation from the Illinois Senate. How do you make the case that you are the right person to continue leading the Department of Natural Resources for the long haul?
It's a great question and something I swirl in my mind, since I've been appointed, and just what I was just telling you. I think my background sets me up perfectly for this. But most of all, I think the best thing I bring to the table is my leadership, and that's one of a servant. And I tell my people every day that we are all servants to the people, and I am the chief servant. And not only do I serve the people of the state, but I serve the people in my organization. I am the least important person in that building, in this agency. I really believe that. But my role still is important. And setting that tone is critical. And what I've heard back from the people, what I'm hearing back from the ground, is that people feel inspired again. They feel hopeful. And I think that has little to do with me. It's more about me getting out of the way and letting light shine on the wonderful people we have and letting them grow. And so I think I can make my case, well, and this has been the honor of my life to do this.
So about a minute left. We are at the Illinois State Fair. What are your must-dos when you're here?
Oh, at the fair? Oh, yeah. Goodness. Well, I was laughing yesterday. You know, the fried what right in front of the governor's tent? last year, I waited to the last day. It kept haunting me. I try to eat healthy. I'm a runner. I try to be, and I had to cave, and I had the key lime, the fried key lime pie, yeah, which was worth every calorie. So.
Have you tried the, I almost said Asian carp, but Kopi? Have you tried the Kopi?
Yesterday, I had, my family was here, my three kids and my husband, and we had one of each, the Rangoon empanada, nuggets, and
could
sliders.
Could you tell the difference between the Rangoon and the empanada?
I could not.
I couldn't either.
To be honest, we were like, I think we got the same thing, so if they're different, they were wonderful.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Well, that's a tease for our listeners. You're going to hear later in the show, myself and our producers and our engineer yesterday tried this. We have a little tape of that we'll share later in the show, some Kopi. DNR Director Natalie Phelps Finney, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Thanks,
on
Brian.
The 21st show.
Yeah, thank you.
More to come in just a moment. We're going to be doing our regular Friday roundtable with an agribusiness reporter and a state government reporter. This is the 21st show. You can join our conversation today, 800-222-9455. More to come. Stay with us.